Pop Spotting 182.
Tuesday, December 20th, 2011. Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's TV Tuesday, and today we're going to catch up with our old Comic-Con friends, the crew at Carmichael Industries on NBC's Chuck, and we will share our take on the end of the fourth season of Sons of Anarchy on FX.
Now, let's start with Chuck. We've been watching this show from the beginning. It's a lot of fun. It's great. It's geek humor. It's awesome to see that on network television when we go to see their panels at Comic-Con. Always a high point. But unfortunately, this fifth season is their last. They're only going to get 13 episodes. They took 2 weeks off recently, which didn't help at all, and now it's pretty much straight through to the series finale at the end of January. How are you enjoying this bittersweet last lap for Chuck?
It's getting better, and it's kind of sad that it's too late. I think it's fun. It's familiar, like old friends, and it's a little silly, but in some ways it's uneven, and it's kind of flailing a little bit. Characters that we think we've gotten to know over these past few years are just doing crazy things and defying logic in the name of moving the plot forward, like this whole virus storyline. It's just so strange, and everything is it's out of character.
Yeah, I think that it seems like because they're in their last season, they're being a little reckless, and sometimes it works. It's fun to see kind of that kind of energy, but sometimes it is frustrating. I mean, it does seem like they're trying to hit every crazy idea that comes up in the writer's room. So on one hand, they kind of come up against an insurmountable challenge. There's a big plot twist, but then, you know, one or two episodes later, it is completely, completely fixed. And the series sort of started out that way this season as well.
That's something that frustrates me about this show all the time. And it's not just this season. Like, at the end of last season, we were wondering, what's the challenge going to be if they have unlimited resources and they're working for themselves? And then they fixed that. But it's always been the case where a character gets himself into a jam or something happens to a character, and it could have gone to a really interesting place, but they lose their nerve at the last minute and decide not to do it, and they magically fix it.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's pretty much been a season of missed opportunities. For example, when we were first thinking we were going to talk about Chuck for the podcast, we had all these great thoughts because you had Morgan as the new Intersect, and I thought that he was a lot of fun, both because he's coming into his own and then becoming really cocky about it, and more importantly, you had Chuck dealing with not having that power and perhaps being a little bit jealous, and it was building to a possibility that Chuck and his best friend Morgan could become the good guy and the bad guy, this great evil nemesis sort of fight that they're setting up. But no, they only carried that for a little while, and now they're best friends again. And I'm just sitting here thinking that that could have been the rest of the season and the rest of the show for me if one of them could have been turned and maybe either be vanquished or be turned back in the end.
I mean, that would have been a huge risk, and there were so many risky things like they could have done. Like I said for a long time, that the most brave and interesting thing that they could have done was to kill Sarah off, or at least to write her out of the show.
No.
Because I think this show would have been interesting if we had seen Chuck trying to navigate this whole super spy business on his own and become his own man and learn to navigate his own life, because now we just get Chuck and Sarah making googly faces at each other. I don't feel like Chuck has grown as a person, and I just, there are so many things they could have done with Chuck that they chose not to do.
Well, you know, I will say that for any show, when you've got that great romantic tension between the leads and when they finally get together, that ruins it. I would never go as far to say that they've done that. I do think that as a married couple, Chuck and Sarah are great together. I'm not sure if I would at this point think that I wanted Sarah out of the show. I do think that I do miss that, and I do think that they're trying to find other ways to add the unknown in terms of the romantic storylines. But I think that, you know, Chuck and Sarah are good together, and they are getting more domestic. I think that in that sense, we're seeing growth in the character. In fact, for better or worse, it sounds like they've gotten past trying to have them grow into being super spies. It seems like they're trying to grow out of it now and become more mature adults, as uninteresting as that might ultimately be. For example, as far as the domestic storylines, the family storylines, you've got Captain Awesome and his sister as parents and dealing with that. And yes, it's well-worn comedic material. It's not new territory, but seeing the two of those two characters go through through it, as much as it might distract from the spy stuff, I'm enjoying that exploration.
I am too. I like Awesome and Ellie. I like them as parents. Sometimes I think the most interesting characters are the side characters. And
definitely.
Like, I like to imagine these really wild and crazy lives for the staff of the Bymore. And I really like seeing two characters that are grounded. I mean, Sarah and Chuck are always on their spy missions, and Ellie and Awesome are normal, and I like to see that. I like to see that there's something other than Chuck and Sarah.
Well, I would agree that they're grounded and, you know, more realistic, but I think people do turn into Chuck more for the cartoonish behavior, the more outlandish and ridiculous things. I guess on that front, we can't be too picky about the plots. It's just that I think that they've done a better job with that in the past, but, well, that's good. You've got Casey. I think that the Adam Baldwin has really come into his own. He's gotten really, I don't know, more comfortable, maybe a little cocky. There's something about his turn as Casey in this season that I like a lot. I mean, for one thing, they're kind of bringing up, I would imagine, the actor's conservatism more and more as a punchline, whether it's gun stuff or pro-life stuff.
I don't think he's really doing conservatives any favors.
No. Well, I mean, but, you know, that's someplace where you might think that the show wouldn't go, that I kind of like that they're doing that. And I think that, you know, great geek positive casting. You know, the show has been awesome in giving you guest stars that get geeks all a titter, and Carrie Ann Moss coming in here as the love interest for Casey. Adam Baldwin, I think, and Carrie Ann Moss have a fantastic chemistry, something that I wouldn't have expected, and there's where I think that energy is coming from that we might miss for Sarah and Chuck. Don't you think she's great?
She is great. She's a little bit of an extension of Trinity, but it doesn't matter, because she was a really interesting character and a lot of fun, and I like seeing Casey romantically involved with people, yeah. And Carrie Ann Moss looked great.
I think she should definitely be back. Speaking of characters coming back, we had General Beckman. She turned up earlier in the season. I thought that was awesome, and now she's back again, kind of driving the plot forward. I mean, she wasn't really a warm and fuzzy character. She wasn't somebody that I would say had a huge fandom, but I think if Chuck is trading at all in that nostalgia factor, they're getting it with her. I was happy to see her again, and now out and about as well.
I don't even think I realized how much I missed her until she came back. I think everything was going really well without her, and I kind of didn't really notice that she wasn't there. But when they started talking about, well, we got to bring Beckman in on this, I kind of silently cheered, because I thought, wow, this is something I really missed. And speaking of characters I miss, we don't see Jeffster, seems like, all that much these days.
Didn't
and they're two of my favorite characters on the show. But now that Jeff is clean and coherent, and Lester is properly sorry for what he's done, I don't really know what's going to happen to them.
Yeah, again, it's an interesting evolution, and perhaps along the lines of the other characters that we're talking about, becoming perhaps more grounded. I think that it was funny that it turns out that Jeff was the way he was because he was being so mean to his brain, and now he's playing the straight man with Lester, but somehow it's just not the same thing, and I don't think they can possibly go back to giving him brain damage just to revisit that.
I know, the whole thing is kind of a shame, because Lester is such a good potential villain. I mean, if they have expanded the series for one more season, I could foresee, like, not a major plot point, but a minor thing that happens within the Bymore where he's scheming and trying to maybe overthrow the powers that be or something like that, because I really always saw the potential in Lester for something really cool and really evil, and it's a shame that they can't do that.
Well, I think that they had that earlier on in the show. I think Lester was always scheming and, you know, did show a darker side, sort of that grand disregard for human life and safety. But I would admit that if he was somehow turned and became the big baddie, he probably would have been more interesting in terms of that role than what we got with Clyde Decker. He was sort of the baddie at least the first half of this season, played by Richard Berge. And I guess, again, you're expecting cartoonish characters, but he was just really flat. I didn't think that he was menacing in any way.
No, he did nothing for me, and he definitely didn't stick around long.
Well, that's true. He had at least, I think, a satisfying end, and perhaps a genuinely surprising moment, a great turn for Carrie Ann Moss's character, Verbansky, there. You know, shout out loud in terms of cheering that. And obviously now they're pulling it further back, and he's part of a bigger conspiracy. You had Rebecca Romijn Stamos last week, and next week coming up with more big reveals, and it's the well-known Christmas episode. I wonder how much further this rabbit hole can go, though, with only 6 episodes left.
I don't know. It's hard for me to get invested in any new characters or any new baddies, given how close we are to the end. I mean, I'm sure she's fine, but I can't really get any build up any excitement for any new baddies because the end is so near.
Yeah, that's the other thing about the show. It almost seems like it's trying prematurely to say goodbye, or really setting up the goodbye. I mean, there's all this talk throughout about let's get out of the spy life, or dealing with the legacy of the family and being in the spy life, and what's our future. And I did like the episode a couple of weeks ago where they reminded us, for example, that Chuck was actually a hacker who knew how to use computers, and then framing that as, oh, it turns out I do have a marketable skill. We could just become normal people. So yeah, I'm getting the sense that they're trying to let us down gently. There's going to be a lot of reflections on this is going to be the last time we're going to see this, or this is going to be the last time they do that. I am looking forward, though, you know, Friday again, the Christmas episode. They've done some pretty good holiday episodes, but we're going to officially be on our way to closing out the second half of this last season, taking us into January.
So the Friday death slot has claimed another victim.
Yeah.
The show will not go on beyond episode 13. The 2-hour finale is slated for January 27th.
So that's our take, our visit with our old friends, Chuck on NBC. Also saying goodbye, but fortunately not forever, was Sons of Anarchy on FX. Now, easily one of our favorite shows, and this fourth season, probably one of our favorite seasons of the show.
It is my favorite season. This season was so strong, and it proved on season 3 in so many ways. I really got into what was going on, and I fell even more in love with the characters.
Right, so the last time we checked in, we were in the closing stretch. We were breathless with anticipation. We were really loving how things were going, and we could not wait for whatever great twist they were going to give us, and now we have seen the season 4 finale, the 2-parter 2B. Was it everything that we hoped it would be?
I hate saying this because I love this season as a whole, but
yes,
something about the finale just felt really off to me. It felt really strange. Like that whole surreal bit at the very end with Jax walking through the clubhouse, and it just took forever and nobody really said anything. And then all of the strange revelations, and then they bring in Wendy and we don't see her again even in the finale. So it's just sort of dropped. And I really felt like I was waiting for something truly either awful or amazing to happen, and it never did. So I don't know how I felt about the finale.
Well, you know, I will say that I was kind of let down as well. I mean, I really enjoyed the preceding 2 or 3 episodes much better than where it ended. I agree that there were big reveals, but they weren't reveals that I felt were earned. And, you know, I definitely agree with you with that last scene. It did what every good episode of Sons of Anarchy does, where suddenly the music starts coming up. They pick a great track, and there's kind of a montage as we settle in, as we try to set up for what's going to happen in that closing great shot. And I think the closing great shot was a good way to do it, to kind of tie the legacy in and the whole generational aspect of this family. But for the most part, once that song started coming, once everybody started looking really mopey and thoughtful, I was like, no, that can't be it. They can't be winding down. So like you, I was like, so then a shot rings out, or then a door opens, and no. I mean, I didn't think any of that was there. I have to wonder if, you know, the show was renewed for its 6th season in October, maybe the things that we were anticipating, we had some great predictions, for example, for Tara, or what might happen with Clay, and there was a fantastic moment when Clay was shot, right? Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, there could be some really daring things, though. I wonder if when they got renewed, they had to backtrack and sort of soften this last bump, because now they have to come up with more story for the next year.
That's what it felt like to me, too. Like, they're really stretching it out and hoping that they get to the more juicy plot stuff next season and the season after. Like, they're pulling their punches.
Yeah, they want to save more big twists for season 5. And on the other hand, when they did try to say, here's a big surprise, ha-ha, you know, here's the reveal of this episode, and it tied into the overarching story, the great conflict with the drug running and the gun running and the Galindo cartel and life or death there. But what they did when they said, oh, okay, you know, Romeo and Louise, turns out they work for someone else entirely, I didn't think that was earned. I think that felt cold and flat, and it made no sense to me whatsoever.
No, it made no sense to me either. I went, what? But not in a good way. I wonder when this was decided. Did they know it all along? Because it really felt like something they pulled out of thin air in service of the plot. I mean, now the Irish don't want to work with Jax, and they have to come up with a way that the Irish will continue to work with the club because it looks really good on TV. And the explanations that Luis and Romeo gave, they were going to debrief Tara. Okay.
No, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I'm pretty sure if we went back to watch the season four again, the behavior of this cartel, these really bad baddies, if they really were working for who they say now that they were working for, they could not have possibly done those things. I mean, yeah, I don't know when it was decided, and if it was the plan all along, I don't think that it was seeded correctly. And then there's the storyline in terms of the Charming Heights, and we need to stop this development. And at least that was a little bit of fun. I mean, we've really talked about how much we like the character of Potter and the actor who
Lincoln
plays him.
Lincoln Potter.
Yeah.
I didn't know how I felt about Lincoln Potter, but now I am completely on the Lincoln Potter love train. That scene in the city council hearing was one of the highlights of the season for me. I mean, he just waltzes into the hearing and dumps a bunch of sex toys on the floor. That cracked me up. I find him completely fascinating now, and I hope we see him more in season five, because he's sort of evil and he's sort of creepy. Creepy, but he's trying to do the right thing, and he's sort of funny. He's really filling the spot that Stahl held for a long time. And as much as I miss Stahl, I think Potter adds this level of weirdness that Stahl just didn't have.
Yeah, I like him. I thought, though, that that whole scene was, in fact, him basically going reckless and giving up and just pulling out all the stops because his whole operation was put in jeopardy as a result of that big reveal with the cartel.
So. Yeah, that's right.
I don't know if we're going to see more of him. I would love to see more of him. I did get the sense that we're going to see a different law enforcement presence or representative next season. I also think, though, that if there was something that they laid the groundwork for, it is a different baddie, a different challenge, a different sort of resistance that they're going to have to deal with next year.
No, season five is going to be the season of Damon Pope because of what Tig did to his daughter.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's good setup there. I mean, a lot of things to look forward to, you know, season finale notwithstanding, a lot of big things did happen in the last few episodes of this season that are clearly going to have long-term ramifications. We're still going to be trying to sort out the structure and the setup and the relationships within the club. Like what happened with Opie? One of the things that we were waiting for maybe at the end of this episode was, is Opie going to come back? He made his play. He went way out on a ledge, you know, and now he's perhaps not in the safest place and we don't see him. Are we done with Opie, or is that going to be a big part of the next season?
Opie and Jax are best friends. They've always been huge parts of each other's lives, and now Opie really has nothing to lose. And I think the only thing that he's bent on right now is getting revenge. I think he's going to go after Clay again.
Well, I kind of like that if he turns out to be the radical, the unpredictable element, the piece of chaos. I mean, one thing that they're trying to do is demonstrate stability. You know, the Irish or any of these other parties are going to want to see that the Suns have their act together, and it's not going to be possible with all of this drama going on. And I think that certainly what we've been watching this past season in particular and really enjoying was the story arc for Tara, you know, Jax's old lady, and what's going on with her. We were worried that she might check out, but it seems that she's doubled down, and she says, all right, if I'm going to be in, I'm going to be seriously in. And I'm certainly looking forward to the setup with the rivalry between her and Gemma.
The letters have been such a huge part of the plot, and especially this season. I can't imagine that we're done with them yet. There's still a whole bunch of letters that Jax hasn't seen that implicate Gemma and Unser in his dad's murder. And I think at the very least, they are really good leverage for Tara against Gemma.
Well, I did like, again, you know, that closing scene that they gave us, the sort of, it turns out that the more things change, the more things stay the same. The more you try to run away, the more they're going to pull you back in, and that you have Tara basically looking at Gemma and saying, all right, well, if he's going to be the president, I'm going to be the queen of this club, and you're done. You're out, just like Clay. You are no longer relevant. And I think that cold, icy stare between the two of them sets up perhaps what might be the most interesting conflict of seasons to come. Because as much as I love Ron Perlman, I mean, gosh, the guy is so awesome and evil and scary at what he does. As much as I think that Jax is a compelling character, you know, the whole Shakespearean Hamlet thing, I think that it's playing out beautifully. But it's that showdown between Katie Sagal and Maggie Siff, those characters, those actresses, that I'm looking forward to the most.
I think it's telling that the show that is ostensibly about these scary, hairy men, that the most interesting characters are two women. And it's the most interesting conflict on the show also. And what I really enjoyed was at the end of the finale, they played a cover. It's the House of the Rising Sun sung by a woman. Mm. And the lyrics are changed a little bit to describe Tara's situation. And I thought that was really interesting. And it's going to a very interesting place.
So as much as the season finale might have left us cold, as much as it might have felt more like setup than a satisfying conclusion, it was a great season of Sense of Anarchy and still a show whose return we cannot wait for.
Of course.
So that's TV Tuesday for this week, Chuck and Sons of Anarchy, but we really like to talk about what you want to talk about, so please don't be shy about keeping us posted on what you're watching and what you think about it as well.
And if you enjoy our podcast, we hope you'll take a moment to share Pop Spotting with your friends and family. We're especially grateful to those of you who have rated and reviewed our show on the iTunes podcast directory, which is really one of the best ways to bring new listeners into the fold.
Absolutely. Now, tomorrow is Wildcard Wednesday, and it's going to be our perhaps inevitable Christmas special. We hope you'll tune in for that. We want to say thanks to Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for making our theme song, but we really want to say thanks to you for listening to our little show.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
Aloha.